It's Friday and time to enjoy a little conversation to send you off to a holiday weekend. I'm Rhonda McBride. Coming up on Juno Afternoon, the Thlinkit called them Sic Moon, the bear that disappears. The bear with silver gray fur that blends in with glaciers. Dr. Martin Luther King, how two groups plan to honor his legacy by asking for your help. How a Juno musician celebrates his birthday, it's become a tradition that George Kuhar shares with the whole community. Watch remains in effect for most of Southeast Alaska due to excessive rain on top of an already heavy snowpack. In Juneau, rain is in the forecast through Saturday, with daytime and nighttime temperatures hovering in the mid-30s. Winds out of the southeast around 10 miles per hour. Tonight and tomorrow morning, a mix of rain and snow in Mendenhall Valley, but little or no accumulation. A chance of rain in the afternoon, and then on Saturday night, a mix of snow and rain with the snow level at 1,400 feet. On Sunday, rain is likely in the morning and then snow later on, with the snow level at 800 feet. Winds out of the east around 10 miles per hour. On Sunday night, mostly cloudy with a chance of snow showers and patchy freezing fog. It will turn colder with lows in the mid-20s. On Martin Luther King Day, expect partly cloudy skies with highs in the upper 20s, a pattern expected to continue through Tuesday night, and then a chance of snow showers returns to the forecast. The sun will rise at 8:30 on Saturday morning, set at 3:45 for a total of 7 hours and 15 minutes of daylight.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Akwan. The Thlinédi have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on what were once tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from their homes from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and the future.
Hansen Gress, Ka eat with the Shu Yi, we Kashuk a eat in. Jin Katka K Jin Talk and a Kaya on a cook. Gunish cheese.
For being here with us today. You are listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. Glacier bears do not exist anywhere else but in Southeast Alaska and British Columbia. Mysterious black bears known for their silvery gray, bluish fur, rarely seen and rarely photographed. But Tanya Lewis, a wildlife biologist with Glacier Bay National Park and Preserve, counts herself lucky to see these bears. She has been involved in a 10-year study in collaboration with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game that includes DNA research, the subject of tonight's fireside lecture, which you can watch online. I spoke with Tanya Lewis earlier this week about her research, in which she says there is still much to learn. For starters, Tanya, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into researching this special subset of bears, glacier bears?
Sure. Yeah, I moved to Gustavus, which is right outside Glacier Bay National Park in 94. You know, started kayaking around a lot and became really interested in bears and learned all I could about bears, along with other wildlife. Wolves, mountain goats have always been very fascinating. I started working as a biological technician for the park in 99 on a variety of projects and just kind of worked my way up, I guess. They hired me in 2001 to lead a crew for the first comprehensive look at bear ecology and bear-human interactions between bears and campers in the park. So I did that for a few years, and then they hired me in 2006 to write the park's first bear management plan. And through that process, we identified some research needs for the park, one of which was understanding this mysterious glacier bear, which seems to be focused in its range in the park. So that kind of got the ball rolling on this project, along with quite a few other bear related projects.
What was it like the first time you saw a glacier bear? Do you remember that?
Well, I saw one in one of my first summers working for the park, the humpback whale monitoring program. So we were looking for whales in Berg Bay, which is on the west side of the park. And we saw this family group of black bears, and my coworker, Janet Nielsen, said, "That's a glacier bear." And at that point, I probably didn't know what a glacier bear was. I was like, "What? What?" And I can't remember if it was either one or two of the cubs were glacier, I believe. I don't think I really recognized the significance of that sighting because I didn't really see another one until a few years ago. We were boating along and watching a black bear, and all of a sudden realized the black bear had two gray rocks with it that were moving with it. And those were the cubs. At that point, I had started this research and was just fascinated watching them and how beautiful the colors of their coats were and how they blended in so well with the intertidal zone because of their gray color.
That's interesting that they would appear like rocks, that this is some kind of a genetic adaptation to help them avoid predators, apparently.
Yeah, and this is jumping the gun a little bit, but a lot of the speculation about these animals was that they evolved during ice ages and so that they camouflage with a glacier environment. And well, my assumption was that, well, that meant they camouflage with ice, but in a glacial environment, there's also a lot of rocks, and rocks tend to be gray in general. So it could be not just ice that they're camouflaged with, but also rocks, and that gave them a selective advantage for this mutation, genetic mutation, if that's what it is, to persist in a glacial environment during ice ages.
Well, we'll come back to the genetic research, but you have just mentioned that they have a range of colors that are not black. They're distinctive. Can you describe what we might see out in nature?
Yeah, the range is basically from black with silver tips, usually on their back. You know, just a silver sheen, really, on the tips of their hairs, mostly back and head. And then they range all the way to almost all white. But the most common is sort of a black bottom or darker bottom with a very gray, light gray top, back, neck. That's probably the most common. But sometimes they can even appear a little bit yellow, not quite blonde, I wouldn't say, but just gray, yellow, I guess.
Well, humans have different hair colors, blonde, brunette, redheads. We're basically human beings, the same creature, despite our hair color. Do these glacier bears have specific biological differences from black bears?
Yeah, that's a great question. We don't think so, but there is hair color and coat color in animals is largely based on genetics. And so there is likely a genetic basis for this color morph that we have not identified yet. They're black bears. Pretty sure they mate with black colored black bears, and they act like black bears for the most part. So same animal.
And they don't have any differences in temperament. Because, for example, with brown bears, grizzly bears, they are definitely more aggressive than, say, black bears. So you notice no difference in the temperament from black bears.
You know, I don't have enough experience, and I don't think anyone has enough experience interacting with glacier bears to really know their temperament, but they appear to act just like other black bears. And just to clear up or sort of go dive further into the brown bear versus black bear behavioral difference with brown bears is not necessarily that they're more aggressive. It's that they evolved in the tundra and there was no trees to climb. Black bears will climb trees when they're scared or threatened. Brown bears evolving in an open terrain learn to face their enemies, I guess. And when they feel threatened, they may attack. That's why they're considered more dangerous. But it's not that they're out looking to hurt us. It's just that if we surprise them in a situation where they feel threatened, maybe they have cubs, maybe they're defending their food, they may attack. And that's the majority of bear attacks, you know, in Alaska and everywhere in North America are defensive brown bears. So I just like to clarify, they're not necessarily aggressive. The reason they attack is because they think we're going to hurt them. More dangerous, not necessarily more aggressive.
So environment is affecting the temperament of the bear. But I guess for people who wonder about the differences between black bears, brown bears, polar bears, I mean, what is the physical difference and why they're classified differently?
Well, they did evolve differently in different places. Brown and black bears diverged millions of years ago. You know, black bears evolved on North America and brown bears in Asia and then came over on the Bering Land Bridge. So they've had millions of years of development separately. But I think the main aspect that affects their behavior is how they evolved in what environments. And so it's believed that black bears evolved in a forested environment. And if you look at their range, they really seem dependent on trees for escape, as opposed to what I just mentioned with brown bears evolving on the tundra. And so basically, where it relates to human interactions, it really comes down to what a bear does when it's surprised. And black bears usually run up a tree, whereas brown bears will stand their ground, maybe display some threatening behavior, try to scare off us or, you know, the threat, and then sometimes rarely attack. Now, all that kind of goes out the window when bears get food from people. And in that case, both black and brown bears can become a problem because they start looking to people for food. And that becomes dangerous in any bear species. And so, you know, that's one thing I'll talk about on Friday is just how important it is in the world of bear conservation to not let bears get our food. And that's a big issue in Juneau, as well as most towns in Alaska or wherever there's bears.
Always, always. I guess a silver bear or a glacier bear is going to be just as eager to raid your trash as a black bear. But maybe we should talk about the glacier bear's population. How rare are they?
Yeah, that is one of the questions, one of the first questions we had and why we started this research. And unfortunately, we don't have an answer to that. They're very rare. We don't know how many there are. We have kind of honed in on their general range. We know how many are hunted every year, but that doesn't really give an idea of how many are still left in the population. The only way to truly get at that would be to identify the genetic basis for the color and then look at a sample of the population and figure out what proportion of bears in different areas have that genetic trait that codes for the glacier hair color.
We have seen some bears in Juneau in the past, some of the glacier bears, they've made it here, but it's not that often that we see them here.
In the early 2000s, some listeners here will remember there was kind of a glut of glacier bears in Juneau. They were getting into trash. They were getting hit on Egan by cars. So likely it was a family, maybe a mom with glacier genetics came in, and there must have been a male around too. They produced a number of offspring that were commonly seen in the town. And I think we just didn't know how cool and rare that was at the time. But I know at least one was killed on Egan. One was killed, I believe, in defense of life and property. Several were translocated out of town because they were getting into trash and creating trouble. But luckily, the area biologist for Fish and Game at the time, Neil Barton, he started collecting genetic samples from these bears when they were moved or killed or any time he had a chance. And that was really the basis of our genetic sampling from the start and kind of got the ball rolling. Meanwhile, I was, as I said, writing the bear management plan for Glacier Bay and inherited this map of sightings and harvests of glacier bears throughout Southeast Alaska that Linda Wiggins, a Canadian woman, had put together, and started kind of wondering how could we get genetic samples from Glacier Bay where there's no hunting allowed. And that led to Neil and I getting together with some others and saying, we really need to get more genetic material. I mean, that's kind of the first step, is like, what are these animals and how are they related to other populations of black bears in the region? Where are they? Where's sort of the epicenter of their range? And is there a conservation risk for these animals in the future?
It makes you wonder if they could be at risk because they're unusual and hunters might specifically target them.
Absolutely. I would say that they are definitely targeted by trophy hunters in this region. It's the only place in the world you can get a glacier bear, basically. Knowing kind of proportions of glacier genes in the populations is really important in terms of ensuring the longevity of the color, coat color.
Did the DNA research answer some questions for you?
Yeah, so basically we found out of 10 populations of black bears in Southeast Alaska, we found 4 of which have glacier bears in them. You know, that was one of our questions. Is it just one population of bears that all the glacier bears belong to? But no, it was 4 different populations. And interestingly, those 4 populations they're not geographically adjacent. There's a big gap in between. That is pretty curious as far as how those genetics basically have spread throughout 4 populations, or perhaps they were all part of a single population, you know, before the last glacial maximum that has then spread out. But curiously, the hole in the middle, which is basically between Lynn Canal and Glacier Bay, where there are no glacier bears, is the least glaciated area of our study area. And the populations that did have glacier bears all adjoin major ice fields. And so can't say for sure, but kind of going back to that camouflage advantage, it does make us wonder if they are associated with glaciers and have, you know, a selective advantage to being in glacial environments. And if that's the case, then we may have more concern about them as glaciers start to recede in the area.
So we have a few pictures on the KTOO Juno Afternoon website, and you can see a mix of cubs in families. Like you might see a black bear sow with 2 glacier bear cubs, or 1 glacier bear cub and another black bear cub. And so it seems like the way that they appear doesn't really have a logical pattern, or does it?
Yeah. So like you said, glacier mothers can have non-glacial black offspring, or vice versa. Black mothers can have glacial offspring as well as black offspring. So it indicates that it's a recessive trait, similar to blue eyes, blonde hair, where you would need to have basically the genes that code for that color from both your mom and your dad, or else you won't be that color, basically. So we think that's true. As I said, we have not figured out the genetic basis. It seems to be a lot more complex than some other similar situations, such as the Kermodee or spirit bear in British Columbia is a pure white bear that has the same trait where, you know, black moms have Kermodee cubs, Kermodee moms have black cubs. So similar to that. And that trait, the genetics that code for that coat color was found maybe 15, 20 years ago. And it's a lot simpler than what we're finding with the glacier bears. But we do know, or strongly suspect, it must be a recessive genetic trait or mutation. Mutation just means that, you know, because most bears don't have it, at some point, probably under isolation due to glaciers, single bear mutated, and that genetic trait perhaps randomly or was selected for because it gave an advantage and it was able to pass on to future generations. So that's our working hypothesis anyway.
So what do indigenous cultures have to say about this? Has there been much research into what they've passed on?
Yeah, that's a great question. I dug into that when I started this research, and I haven't found a lot, but I talked to a Tlingit elder in Yakutat, George Ramos, and he had the most information that I've found. I haven't seen anything really written, but he described glacier bears as being elusive, and they actually called the bear that disappears, I think in terms of camouflage, just blending into the glaciated environment and disappearing. In the old days, they didn't actually hunt these bears because they recognized them as being special and rare, and that the first hunters of glacier bears were actually European trophy hunters that came in the early 1900s or late 1800s. So that's the only information I've really been able to find, besides a few references to glacier bears in various cultural ethnographies, but yeah, not a lot of information.
Okay. And I understand that in your lecture, you will also have a lot more pictures of the glacier bears. And I imagine that those are pretty special to see.
Yeah, that's probably the most fun part of putting this talk together is just collecting like the best glacier bear pictures that I can find. But there's really not that many pictures out there. You know, I have about 10 or 15 that show the wide range that we were talking about in terms of coat color, from just barely silver tipped to almost all white. So that's a real fun part of this presentation, I think.
Tanya Lewis, a wildlife biologist with Glacier Bay National Park Service. She was scheduled to give her presentation at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center tonight at 7, but that has been moved online due to the recent spike in COVID cases. So go to the Mendenhall Visitor Center Facebook page and you can watch her lecture live at 7. Next, Martin Luther King's legacy remembered not just in words, but also in deeds. How you can take part.